Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast, where horror and thrillers are reviewed, but it's the next scream that you hear your own. My name is Lisa, or the Bad Movie Bunny, and this is a bonus episode, but it's very, very overdue. Life happened, I guess you could say, and a good chunk of this was due to the comic book and horror conventions where I vend knitted handmade characters, plush cats that I reimagine as Nightcrawler or Jason Voorhees, and things like candles. Given that this took up a lot of time in the past year, and probably will again in 2023, it hit me that some of this could be integrated into my podcast given the overlap of the horror genre. I mean, God, what else would I watch when knitting Jason Voorhees or other zombies? This episode is dedicated to the Horror Gives Back Challenge back in October of 2022. This was created by Erica and Lance of the Unsung Horrors podcast, which you can find on many platforms as well as Twitter as @UnsungHorrors. The challenge was also a fundraiser. For every movie a participant watched during the month of October, they could donate a dollar or more to the Best Friends Animal Society. As hectic as the month got to be, I participated and really enjoyed the challenge. So let's get into it. Day one was dedicated to an Amicus production. I chose 1970's The House That Dripped Blood, which you can find on Tubi. This is an anthology with stories revolving around an old rental house. Now, anybody who rents this weird little house meets an interesting death. You know, maybe, let's say, the business end of an axe for looking at the wrong wax figure in a certain wax museum. Notable stars include John Pertwee, the Third Doctor himself, and Denholm Elliott, who you might know from Indiana Jones and Toy Soldiers. He plays a horror writer who has terrible writer's block. He is unable to type out a single decent paragraph, but he does rent out an old house that his wife hates, but it has a great library, which apparently inspires him. Either way, his book is on track. Well, his villain is made up anyway, and damned if he isn't always showing up at weird times, but he's not real, or is he? Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and Ingrid Pitt also deliver great performances. Now, I'm picky about anthologies, but this was pretty good, and maybe the best I've seen. I might avoid wax museums for a while, however. Day 2 is devoted to sequels, and I dug into my DVD collection to choose Halloween 4 from 1988. Well, with the last Halloween sequel out, I don't trust this, and I also don't trust that Magic Mike has the last dance. I've seen too many horror franchises. No. Anyway, I may as well revisit a sequel that was canon at one point, and then it wasn't, okay? Donald Pleasance is back on the trail when Michael Myers escapes the asylum yet again by way of ambulance and sticking his thumb into the head of a paramedic. Okay. Finding that his sister Lori had died, Michael goes after his little niece, played by Danielle Harris, and her foster family. Trick-or-treating, clown costumes, and bloody mayhem follow, and this includes a scene where a guy gets thrown into a power grid, blacking out power for the entire neighborhood. It was a DVD 2-pack and I got my money's worth. Day 3 was devoted to Linnea Quigley, and I chose 1988's Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, which you can get on Tubi. Now, right out of the gate, there is a disclaimer to not use chainsaws as they were used in the movie by professionals. The director, Fred Olen Ray, makes this disclaimer and signs off that his conscience was clear. Yeah, that's the earmark of quality right there. I was expecting a slasher comedy, and I got one. Only they tried to add elements of Raymond Chandler-style noir, right down to naming the private eye male lead Jack Chandler, with the monologues and the bad quips. That said, there was plenty of chainsaw action, and for some reason, a cult that worships chainsaws with a chainsaw god complete with a temple. Makes you wonder what else you'll find at a Hollywood Lowe's. Gunnar Hansen was okay as the cult leader in question, but he was much better as Leatherface. The dialogue overall was pretty crappy, and the soundtrack from the band The Fugitive Kind was god-awful, but it had its funny moments, and it mostly involved power tools. Day 4 was devoted to Italian horror, and I chose the 1977 Suspiria, which you can find on Tubi. This is a favorite of mine, and it's due to the soundtrack composed by the band Goblin. It's surreal, and it has so many bright gel lights you'd think that it was a disco instead of a ballet academy in some scenes. But it worked. It was dramatic, atmospheric, and over the top in the best way. So how about that death by wire scene in the beginning? Day 5 is all about body horror. I chose 1993's Body Mill, which you can find on Tubi, but I have this on DVD. And I can explain why. It was a raffle prize that I won at B-Fest one year. This is an Australian film that was a little stilted, but I mean, it had its funny moments, and there was some good special effects. Now, in the beginning, a scientist is injected with a drug, and he ends up wandering into a convenience store, drinking dish soap, and then melting to death. It turned out that he was trying to warn a neighborhood against a miracle diet that melts away way more than just a few pounds. And with some of the shakes and powders still out today, the movie's as cautionary as it is gory and humorous. Day 6 is all about LGBTQ horror, and I chose 2021's Fear Street, 1994, and you can find this on Netflix. This is part one of a trilogy, and it had been on the watch list for a while. Alright, it's not all that gory, it plays a little too much on the 90s nostalgia, but altogether it was an enjoyable watch. I like that the final girls were a couple. At some point, I will watch 1978 and 1666. I'll find time. I really will. Anyway, Day 7 is all about New World Pictures. I chose 1971's The Velvet Vampire, which you can find on Tubi. I kinda wish I didn't. It was a little trippy. And the movie followed the formulaic trope of a vampire who finds a couple, invites them to her estate, castle, this was a remote desert home with a nearby graveyard, only to have blood, sex, and mayhem follow. So this gorgeous woman invites a young couple with a philandering husband out to the desert for dune buggy driving. Yeah. Good grief. You know, I need to rewrite these stories and have the vampire chick just immediately go for the girlfriend or wife and tell her that the husband's a creep. So let's have a little bit of bloodletting and margaritas. It'll be a hit, trust me there. Day 8 is all about animals, and I went back to my DVD collection to choose 1981's Roar. Now, in addition to this being a favorite, you know, another one I picked up at B-Fest, I was cat-sitting that month, and I needed a little something for my charges to enjoy. I mean, I was letting them watch all the horror movies as well as those naughty CW shows, but still. It's weird seeing lions and tigers on my TV, rolling around, chasing the broom as the floor was swept, as, you know, two mighty lionesses in my living room roll on my carpet as I wave a string toy about. Now, I wanted them to appreciate their jungle royalty roots, but they liked the toy and were unimpressed. It's still one of my favorite movies. So many cute kitties. Day 9 is devoted to Tom Savini, and I chose 1985's The Ripper, which you can find on Tubi. The list of 80s horror movies that I haven't seen is getting smaller and smaller. This movie centers around a class on how historical crimes are portrayed in film. As this is set in the mid-80s, and before True Crime YouTube, Investigation Discovery, wow, even Unsolved Mysteries, one could say this was a true crime college course. And there was also a scene where a theater class was more or less a jazzercise music video. Shit, I wish this was my college experience. All the same, true crime teacher comes across a ring that Jack the Ripper himself wore. So the spirit possesses him into killing both random women and one of his own students. Tom Savini plays the reincarnated Jack the Ripper that, for all the bad dialogue, was an interesting take on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Day 10 was about Fabio Fritzi, and I chose 1985's The Scorpion with Two Tails, which was on Tubi. Now, Fritzi did a lot of music to movies that I've seen, including Cat in the Brain and Kill Bill. Score was good, the movie was, not so much. Fuck it. Day 11 was about movies from Mexico, and I chose 1993's Cronos, which you can find on HBO Max. This started with commentary from Guillermo del Toro, as this was his first feature. While the movie won awards, it was not that well received at first, and I think it was because it wasn't a sexy vampire story. They treated vampirism so much as drug addiction, where the main character licks up nosebleed blood in a bathroom. I mean, eternal life and its merits were questioned, especially as the vampire, our protagonist, was innocently infected with an alchemist chronology device mistaken as an antique the poor man could sell in his shop. This guy was a grandfather who just wanted to run his store, play hopscotch with his granddaughter, and maybe get a little frisky with the cute tango instructor next door. Instead, he's pricked by this chrono device and chased by greedy men who want money and eternal life. And it was kind of sad how things unfolded, but it was scary and sweet in a way that only Del Toro can tell it. He marveled over getting to use a crane shot in this film in the commentary. It was just so adorable to watch. Anyway, day 12 is all about witches, and I chose 2021's The Unlit Witches of Blackwood, which can be found on Tubi. Now, this is one of those small-town melee movies. It was very well shot, but it got kind of slow, especially regarding the family secrets and curses. However, I love the beginning sequence where there are some pissed-off witches who don't like it when travelers pull over to pee in the woods. So that made for an interesting beginning kill. Hey guys, why so pissy? Day 13 was devoted to an Indonesian horror, and I chose 2018's May the Devil Take You, which you can find on Netflix. I didn't expect a lot of gore or scares from this, as I don't from horror movies on Netflix or Netflix originals. Holy shit, this movie, on the other hand, did not mess around. It had everything. Family drama. Faustian bargains to kick off that family drama for short-term wealth and a new trophy wife. Demonic possession, witchcraft, forest chases, rundown villas, and there was a showdown in the evil basement to make it complete. They did not skimp on the CGI when it came to the effects on possession or puking blood. I was pleasantly surprised by this movie and highly recommend it. Day 14 was about 1960s horror. I chose 1964's The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, which I saw on Tubi. When I've gone to Universal Studios Florida for the Halloween horror houses, the Universal's Monsters House rank among the favorites. The Mummy as the year's icon did not disappoint me. So why not choose one of the movies? It starts off with European excavators finding an Egyptian tomb complete with treasures plus the mummified prince. One American really wants to show this off in museums that are far away from the mummy's place of rest and home country. It sounds like the bulk of art history as a whole, where Britain and France, among others, fill their museums with stolen artifacts. Last Week Tonight had a segment on this, and you can find it on YouTube. One of our villains tells the leading lady that she should not use her intelligence for quote-unquote academic pursuits, as intelligence is gainfully employed in the home. And this is before asking if she was going to marry her boyfriend, and responding her life would be wasted if she did. Because she's so very beautiful. I really wanted to see them all on the business end of a pissed off mummy. Day 15 is devoted to physical media. I chose Rosemary's Baby. Now, I like the original novel by Ira Levin much more, and this holds true for the Stepford Wives. That being said, the movie version of Rosemary's Baby is a good example of atmosphere and tension in horror. The performances by Mia Farrow and Ruth Gordon really made the film a favorite of mine. Whether in pulp, novel, or film form, I wanted to deck Guy Woodhouse. Or just serve him with divorce papers. Day 16 was an in memoriam. For Henry Silva and Angela Lansbury, I chose 1962's The Manchurian Candidate. Now, while not a horror movie, it was on my to-watch list. I mean, the plot can scare the hell out of you if you think about it. Angela Lansbury was quite chilling as a domineering right-wing mother and stage mom to her drunk senator husband. I liked the movie, but there was yellow face in Henry Silva's casting that I did not like. That this was made during unrest from the Red Scare, among other things, made that worse to me. Nevertheless, I'm still glad I picked and finally saw it. Day 17 was devoted to picking a year made the year you were born. Not to date myself, but I took to Tubi and chose 1978, The Eyes of Laura Mars. This was another one on my list, and I like the glitz of it and how photography is treated as art, fashion, as well as a way of seeing. And speaking of seeing, I saw a young Tommy Lee Jones and Brad Dourif, and it was a little unnerving. Faye Dunaway was pretty good. Now, the start of the movie was very strong and continued from there. A model argued that using images of murder to sell deodorant might make people as sick of murder as they'd be of the magazine ad. Later, the gallery showing goes from glitzy to fucked when the news of the model's murder spreads. Her eyes were gouged out. Ugh, way to tap into one of my big fears. Well, the soundtrack definitely gave away that this was made in the 70s. Damn, I'm old. Alright, Day 18 was a movie based on a book. I chose Battle Royale. I remember when I first saw the live-action Battle Royale movie. I was home from college and a friend showed this to me. There were no subtitles, but she knew enough Japanese to give us the gist of the story. I was riveted to the screen then, and I was years later when I got the DVD and later the original novel by Koshun Takami. It had everything. Totalitarian allegory, gore, and middle schoolers fighting to the death on the remote island. I highly recommend both. Day 19 was devoted to Bleeding Skull, and I chose 1991's Dark Cat. You can get this on YouTube. This was one of those anime movies that gave me flashbacks to high school, mostly in the art style. Like many fans of the period, mid to late 90s, I watched whatever I could find, things like Lilycat, Sailor Moon, Demon Slayer. Strangely enough, I never came across this story of people randomly exploding, cat spirits, and dick monsters. It was a weird time, but great art, great animation, and kitties. What more could you want? Day 20 was devoted to monsters. Well, we gotta do the King of the Monsters. I chose 1964's Ghidorah, the Three-Headed Monster, which you can find on HBO Max. We have UFOs, plane explosions, right in the beginning of the movie. We have royal interplanetary plots to murder the Princess of Venus to gain power, stage shows, and soon we learn that a space monster just decimated Venus and is coming to Earth. When you see the cheesy effects of a firebird turning into Ghidorah, you know that the Kaiju Battle Royale will go beyond Godzilla and Rodan kicking large mounds of dirt at one another with a caterpillar Mothra looking on. As Ghidorah starts destroying Earth, the dirt kicking had to stop and the monster team-up began to fun results. My love of Kaiju and Godzilla began with my love of the webcomic Twisted Kaiju Theater, which I started reading in the early 2000s. It just kept getting funnier with time, and I'll link the site in the description. And you can get yourself a print or some coffee, something that always keeps you sane. Day 21 is, well, I love the 80s. I took to Shudder and chose 1980's The Changeling. And I did so because I've heard great things about the movie, but never got around to seeing it. George C. Scott delivers a performance as haunting as the house he buys from the Historical Society after losing his wife and daughter to an accident. Well, as picky as I am about haunted house movies, this was pretty good. It was psychological and had a nasty blend of family drama that made me root for Scott even more at the end. Day 22 was devoted to Dee Wallace, and I chose 1991's Alligator 2 The Mutation, which you can get on Amazon. I think I've been scrolling through Twitter's Gator Daily feed for far too long. I rooted for the giant alligator that took over a lake and tried to take an extended vacation in the city right away. I mean, he became mutated due to a greedy tycoon dumping chemicals into said lake, and yet people wonder why a gator might eat a few fishermen before saying something about it. Cool movie. Definitely worth the watch. Day 23 was devoted to vampires, and I mistakenly chose 1987's A Return to Salem's Lot, which you can find on HBO Max, though I recommend you don't do so. Oh, man. When I first read Salem's Lot, the novel, to me, the beginning felt a little slow and exposition-y as a then 12-year-old reader. However, the scene where the kid appears to his friend as a vampire scared the shit out of me. I was very disappointed by the first movie adaptation with David Soul. Now, this sequel, starring a pre-Law & Order Michael Moriarty, who is also in Troll, almost forgot the B-horror credits, I couldn't even finish this. Moriarty plays an anthropologist who returns to a town he visited as a kid, plagued with vampires. One of those vampires was a girl he had a crush on as a preteen. She made a point to be 17 forever to wait for an adult Moriarty to come back to Salem's Lot. There were vampire kids getting married, and I was creeped out. I couldn't finish this. No, do not look for or watch this movie. It's gross. Day 24, their theme was Hail Satan. I chose 2017's American Satan. You can find it on Tubi. Now, I tried to like this, but all I could see was a sell your soul to the devil trope. There was no real accountability, and it was played by the pretty boy frontman of Black Veil Brides, a band I don't really care for much either. Now, I saw a version of this premise in Paganini Horror and Jennifer's Body, and through Jennifer's Body, the pretty rock star playing the villain that sold their soul to Satan for fame. I'm sorry, Daria Nicolodi and Megan Fox were much better to watch. Day 25 was devoted to the Universal Studio, and I chose 1925's Phantom of the Opera out of my DVD collection. Whew, after those last two, I need a good movie. I've always liked the score in Phantom of the Opera. I look in IMDb to find that a number of the composers were uncredited at the time. All the same, Mary Philbin and Lon Chaney were great to watch. Day 26 was devoted to Christopher Lee, and I chose 1958's Horror of Dracula, which you can find on HBO Max. Well, if you want a faithful, to-the-letter book adaptation, look somewhere else. Now, if you want a few liberties with the characters while sticking to the basic plot, if you're looking for great costumes and scenery, complete with powdery makeup effects for key scenes where certain antagonists find themselves in direct sunlight, this is the movie for you. It's a fun watch, and you're in it for Christopher Lee as a very good Dracula. Day 27's theme was slasher movies, and I chose the Friday the 13th reboot from 2009, which you can find on HBO Max. Well, it had to be the only Friday the 13th I haven't seen yet. Yes, I saw Jason X. Unfortunately, not all of it was on the big screen as I fell asleep during that time slot at B-Fest. I mean, I knit the character all the time. It felt wrong not to watch them all. So, this installment into the Jason canon cinematic universe, I feel it could have been named Friday the 13th Protect Jason's Weed. There were true groups of fodder with a connecting final girl. I mean, it was an interesting way to do it, but part of the legend of Crystal Lake entailed a sizable patch of marijuana, which various targets sought out and eventually found. Jason was none too thrilled on top of the usual Jason woes of partying campers. It just seemed like all the popular tropes of the many sequels got crammed into this movie, including the infamous arrow in the head. The Nightmare on Elm Street reboot had this problem too, in my opinion. Plus, neither were as gory as the heyday of slashers. Jason, you phoned it in for this one. Day 28 was about folk horror, so I rented 1970s Cry of the Banshee on Amazon. And it was worth that rent, as Vincent Price is a theme unto himself. In this movie, an overzealous witch hunter terrorizes a small town trying to find a coven, but he ends up killing innocent people, including his own loved ones. It was solid, with great performances. Vincent Price really brought a lot to his roles. Day 29 was all about director of photography Freddie Francis. I chose 1975's The Ghoul, which you can get on Tubi. In the beginning, the viewer gets a sense of a society party gone wrong. At some point, there's even a fancy car race. It really looked like the Wacky Races at one point, and I was in my pajamas eating cereal during this movie. It ends at a haunted house with a creepy gardener and a shed of caged animals. He tells pretty girls not to go into the house high on the moors, even though this is an emergency where a phone, petrol, and your date are needed but not available. That said gardener was right didn't make it any better, as everyone is creepy and there's a cannibal locked up. While the stories and characters jumped around, it was fun to watch, and Peter Cushing delivered as always. Day's 30's theme was haunted houses. Alright. I chose 1982's Amityville 2: The Possession on HBO Max. Of all the sequels in the Amityville cinematic universe, this was probably the best one. It was loosely based on the DeFeo case, where the eldest son murders his entire family with little memory of his actions. We have the same premise here, but there's a demon in the basement that causes the father to become abusive and the priest to find a destroyed Bible after coming over to bless the house. Yeah, sure, the basement demon made me do it all. Now, I drove by the Amityville house with friends many years ago. It's not all that scary. However, the price tag might be a different story. Now, the last day, day 31, was viewer's choice, and I went with 2022's Terror Train, which you can find on Tubi, as it's a Tubi original movie. They made a remake of the 1980 film starring Jamie Lee Curtis. Now, I had a feeling that some parts of the original, such as dead bodies used as a sex prank, that couldn't get remade. So I see an ad for it watching another movie, and I got a little curious. The dead body was definitely in this one, but while a faithful remake overall, there were some tweaks, particularly in how the killer was revealed. It was more of an homage to the first Friday the 13th, with some costume changes. I'm kinda glad they didn't go with the ending reveal from the original movie, and they very clumsily tried to make the fraternity inclusive and up to date for 2022. I mean, I guess it made the decapitation scene look a little funnier. Now, I guess Tubi made a few of these reboots, so maybe it's worth looking into. And with that, here ends a very late episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast. You can find more content on Twitter and or Facebook at Bad Movie Bunnies. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. But before I bounce, here's a few words from the Prescribed Films Podcast Network. Thanks again, and check them out.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.